Welcome to the Continuous Delivery Podcast. My name is Zarar.
I'm Hino.
I'm Cheesy.
I'm Trevor.
Today's topic is mocking. How does effective mocking help us get to continuous delivery?
I have worked with lots of organizations where the application under development is divided amongst multiple teams, where you create dependencies both within your small group, but also dependencies outside of the group. And it's almost not possible to always ensure that everything finishes at the exact right time. So being able to mock out one of those dependencies while you're in development is a great way to continue to keep your development going. On a testing perspective as well, often in places where they have complex, really large systems that are comprised of a lot of different pieces and parts, you really don't want to write tests that span all those pieces or parts, because it's a great way to ensure that your tests become very, very brittle. So again, if you need to run tests that are slightly above unit tests, or that test a little bit more, then it's a great way to allow you to simulate those other pieces. And last but not least, there are times or places where getting the right data set up for something that you want to verify is not easy. And so instead of spending large amounts of time doing that, often mocks will allow us to set those up faster.
It essentially is a way to ensure that you can move forward faster by not being blocked by those external dependencies. And one of the things that I've seen as well, of the use cases at least where mocking might be very valuable, is when you're relying on backend or upstream services that are not always available and they're not as stable as you might need them to be in order to be able to depend on them on a daily basis, especially not in a development environment. And when that is the case, your mocks kind of save you when those systems are down as well. So it even helps with that too. Of course, there is something else to fix, and that is the stability of those systems. But while you're working on that, you can still at least continue to develop what you're working on.
Mocking in itself is not going to help you with continuous delivery, because you have a lot of code you're writing and you're testing it with mocks, and maybe the service that eventually you're depending on is not ready yet. And you're in the meantime, maybe you've communicated with that downstream team that, hey, I'm going to send you this payload, assume it's there. So mock it while you're developing. But at some point, the other party may still not be ready, but you have to ship your code. So mocking in conjunction with feature flags becomes a really powerful tool.
Yes, for sure. Although, you know, for me, I like all of my testing to be repeatable, and I don't like tests that fail for unknown reasons. And that's why I really like to test each and everything independently, but combined with the feature flag, it gives you the ability to push things out where maybe those dependencies that you have had mocked aren't ready. Whenever it becomes available, then you can open that up, you know, so that's very valuable. So far, we're talking about mocks as in mocking out whole systems, but mocks also work very well in a more granular basis whenever we're in writing our unit tests, to especially with some frameworks that have a fair amount of complexity with it, to be able to mock out the complexity of the framework itself while we focus on the business logic that we're writing within that framework is a great way to start, and then to continue to follow through of pulling our logic out of that framework is the continuation of that. So again, it's really about creating or taking a piece of our functionality or our behavior, isolating it in such a way that we could really get accurate tests around it, whether that be in the small or be something larger.
Yeah, and a great example of that really is Angular, because Angular comes with a lot of testing tools, which people don't necessarily like Testbed is the one that I'm talking about. And that is, to your point, the complexity that comes with the framework. And a lot of people use Jest and mocking in Jest to avoid the complexity of Angular. So that kind of fits in nicely.
That really mocks gives you the possibility to be able to test that very, very specific class or that very, very specific behavior. And regardless of where you are in that stack, right? In the UI, it allows you to just test the UI without the backend. And even if you are within your any of your backend services, you can just test that particular business logic. So for me, mocking is really allows you to focus on system under test.
And one negative pattern or one anti-pattern with mocking that I've constantly observed, sometimes you have a tendency to over-mock. Like, for example, like if we expect, say, three or four critical fields from the system for the test we are writing, we will, in our mocks, whether it be WireMock or whatever tool that you want to use, you may have the entire payload there, all like 60 fields. So when as a new developer reading the test and you're looking at the mock and you're looking at the code, you see a mismatch there. You see that the test is really only asserting against three fields, but maybe the mock contains like 30 or 40 fields. So now you're kind of hesitant to change the code because you don't necessarily know whether the other 57 fields are required to assert the value that you are asserting. That's a very common mistake that I see with mocks. Any other anti-patterns that you've observed when using mocks?
One that I don't, and it actually plays into what you just said, Sarar. One that I don't like a lot is basically recording a network interaction and then using the data that comes from that network interaction directly into your tests. Because what you're actually doing is you're indeed creating that full payload, which makes it very unclear what you're actually testing, which makes it very difficult to create a new test and basically create an object or a payload that contains only the stuff that you're interested in at the same time. And oftentimes what I see as well is that those particular payloads are used not in one test, but are used in 5, 10, 15 tests. And then suddenly when you want to change one of those things, you need to change the payload and you're suddenly impacting a whole bunch more tests than you would like. And all of those problems would encourage people to not change the tests, not adapt the payload, and keep on struggling with the system they have set up until that point, right? So I like to isolate it as well and extracting the pieces from the payload that you're using and that you're expecting in that particular test. And that makes things an awful lot more clear.
So when I was first learning how to use mocks a long time ago, I was taught that if you feel the pain of setting up mocks, i.e., if there's a lot of work that you have to do to set them up, it probably is a reflection on your design and you're probably missing an abstraction layer or something like that. And so having that notice that, you know, wow, I just took me quite a bit of complexity to set up that mock was always a trigger for me to go back and reevaluate the design that I had so far. It seems today there are a lot of tools and frameworks now that will automatically generate all those mocks and automatically slam everything together for you. And you don't have the opportunity to feel that pain. You don't have the opportunity to see that. And whenever I start having conversations with some developers about, you've got 7 dependencies here that you're dealing with, don't you think that there's a problem with this design? The tools have shielded them from that and they don't realize that. So That's something else that I would point out as a problem with how I see some mocks being used.
It also kind of lends credence to approaches like test-driven development, because if you are using TDD, then you're almost forced to think about those dependencies and you're forced to think about those mocks early on. So you're always operating on a very thin slice. So you will never overdo your mocks because you're in this constant loop of like fail test, pass test, refactor. So you're never even in a position to write a big mock because that would be anti-TDD.
Yeah, one interesting question is about when you're asking mocking, let's say databases or mocking other. This is a big conversation. What level do we want to test that? Because the database themselves, they already. Like sometimes I see this pattern where where their unit tests are put on the top of databases, and we don't have to test them because we know databases work, but mocking for one level or one layer higher is usually a good place where we want to make sure that the data that this database provides is what we need for our tests.
When you start talking about tests and mocking, and one of the things that becomes very evident early on is that how static functions or static classes or static anything kind of throws off your entire testing strategy, because now you can't necessarily, or if you can mock static functions, you have to reset them every time. And it's probably not a good idea if you're running, say, hundreds of thousands of tests, maybe not hundreds of thousands, maybe thousands of tests at the same time. Now you're worried about race conditions. So again, it kind of emphasizes how important it is to not or to avoid writing static functions, because they're also harder to test and harder to mock.
Yeah, singletons sit in the same boat, right? So yeah. It's the same issue.
And one other benefit of mocking that I've found is that oftentimes you can't really replicate certain data conditions downstream. And oftentimes you see teams going, say, well, let me test this in UAT. Why don't you go change the value in the database and I'll see what's on the screen. And that is an anti-pattern that we can address by really coaching our developers and our quality people to have control over what the payload coming back is, because it takes 2 seconds to simulate something in the payload and it takes maybe 2 days to get something set up in the downstream database. So that mentality of really pulling towards you the ability to mock the things you are relying on can really speed up your development by, you know, tenfolds really.
Yeah. So one of the things that you triggered there with that particular comment, Sirar, is an anti-pattern that I've seen in the past as well, that I've seen mocks being implemented with half, if not more, of the business logic of the objects that they are mocking. So instead of just expecting a certain value and giving another value back, they are interpreting the value that is the parameter of the or the argument of the function call, and they're using this, processing it in a very similar way as the actual object would or the actual service does, and basically return the calculated value. So if you go that way, you're basically re-implementing the business logic that you're trying to mock out. So that's an anti-pattern that I've seen in the past as well.
And one clever little technique that I've seen, especially if you're working in like legacy systems or legacy environments, sometimes it's kind of easy to talk about, why don't you use JUnit for this? Just mock it using Makito or use Jest. And those sort of assume a fairly modern stack. But if you are working in a mainframe environment where, you know, you're making broker calls across sockets or what have you, you can achieve the same effect of mocking by using some network sniffing software, like Charles is the one that I always think of. It's Mac only, but there are network level tools which we can use. So when entity A is calling entity B, a network sniffer intercepts it and gives you the mock value that you return. So it's not just limited to the modern stack. You can actually achieve these effects using older technologies as well.
And sometimes it's not mocking libraries like you just said, or I'll give a good example. Very recently, I was working with a group that had some legacy Java code, and they had some Hibernate and fairly complex Hibernate queries that they were making. And again, in order to mock it, they didn't have a really nice, clean data abstraction layer. And what was there, that layer that they sort of had, again, build up these very, very complex queries and such. And to try to mock those was futile. So, but what we were able to do is slap an in-memory database that wasn't really a mock, okay, per se, in the sense of a mock, but it was something that was much faster than going against the real database. And it was something that from the unit test, we were able to literally in a matter of like 2 or 3 hours, build a little framework that allowed us to load in the data before the test and clean it up. So it was in essence that the only way that they this specific group felt comfortable testing those Hibernate queries.
And that concludes this edition of the Continuous Delivery Podcast. Goodbye.